Oh, the one, the perfection of love, harmony and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Now to begin, let's generate some sounds that resonate in some of the different subtle centers of the body. Starting below and working our way up. So first of all, center your attention in the solar plexus, just beneath the sternum, where the two sides of the rib cage come together. There's a nervous plexus there, and the subtle node of that place functions as an inlet in which what Murshid calls the all-pervading life in space is drawn in. So center yourself, center your attention there, and we intone the vowel eh, as in the word, for instance, red, eh, and let it vibrate there, and feel the vibration of your sternum and beneath it the solar plexus. Awakening this subtle node. And lift your attention up to the next level, the level of the chest, the space of the heart. And here the vowel is an expansive sound that reverberates and opens up a remarkable upwelling of energy in the chest and even extending out through the shoulder blades in the back. And that vowel is ah. And lift your attention up to your throat. And to that zone of speech that reaches all the way up to the roof of the mouth. And now the vowel is oo. Then rise up to the brain and particularly to the pineal gland in the center of the brain. Now the frequency of the sound is heightened to a very high pitch, and the vowel is E. So now be aware of all four levels simultaneously, the solar plexus, the heart, the throat, and the brain. And choose one vowel to intone, focusing there, but listen also to the intonations of the other voices in the room and let those intonations vibrate in you so you feel the whole spectrum pulsing up and down. So this is an exercise that helps to unlock the tonalities that are built into the configuration of one's body, which is a microcosm of the whole cosmos. And in this way one learns more and more to listen to the music of the spheres, which is played out in everything, in the rhythm of one's breath, in the beat of your heart, in the sonic signature of each of your organs and limbs. Everything vibrates, and the remembrance, the glorification of each and everything is in accordance with its tenor. And when one's own remembrance becomes constant, it becomes a continuous drone, you may find that you become apprised of the droning intonations of all things. All intermingling. Then you listen to the world around you differently. When someone speaks, it's not only the vocabulary that he or she chooses that is important, but equally the cadence of the voice. Much meaning can be perceived by listening to this, listening to the rhythms of the breaths of those around you. Finding a music in the seasons and in the hours of the day. And in this way, one learns to harmonize with life. It's a subtler code. To fulfill one's duty musically by always harmonizing. And of course, harmony is not monotony. It isn't tuning all of the keys of the piano to one note. But it is the beautiful interplay of notes that makes music. This attentiveness, this responsiveness is possible in a state of attunement when one is not overshadowed by carking cares, one is not distracted by compulsions. The overwhelming force of conditioned habits, but rather one is at one's ease, breathing freely, the bloodstream flows unobstructed, the breath flows fluidly, matter keeps disintegrating into spirit, spirit keeps crystallizing in matter. So the shackles are thrown off. This is the condition attained in the sixth stage of the alchemical operation. The mutual infusion of spirit and matter is precisely in this way that one can overcome the compulsion of mechanical habits and the hegemony of conditioned impressions, the conditioning that impressions promote when the mind is impelled in deeply carved ruts that lead only in circles. The only recourse is to to be lifted out of the grid. So in the interpenetration of planes comes a new freedom. To be locked into any one plane is at last confining. But the great freedom, the great awakening comes when moving between levels, ascending and descending, to see the many in the one and the one in the many, the fruit is a reciprocal nurturance, the manner in which the Divine Spirit, through the quickening of the Ruh al-Qudus, the Holy Spirit, acts upon this world, but conversely also the yield of this material sphere is lifted up again. And as Sheikh Al-Akbar says, it feeds God. The perfect essence feeds the realm of multiplicity through a constant dispensation of being. We have no being of our own. Our being is simply our access to the existence of the one being. So this nourishment of being communicated through the descent of spirit, crystallizing in matter that is continuously replenished through its communion with essence. In this way, being sustains what we call ourselves and sustains the world. And conversely, the world and its multitudinous entities function as angles of vision, channels of experience, theaters of manifestation in which the divine being is continuously renewed in self-discovery. And so the uplifting of our earthly experience, the reporting back on our sojourn, is a nourishment, it is a worship. Our task is nothing more or less than worship, and worship is prayer, worship is glorification, the lifting up of all and everything back to the source. And worship is service to the totality by attending to all particles in the awareness of the One. So our very shape illustrates this role of khilafat, this role of delegated responsibility, this covenant that is ours to uphold, to represent the invisible amidst the visible, to stand for the eternal amongst the ephemeral, to link up the worlds, to reconcile the contradictions. And that organ in us which is by its nature designed to fulfill this possibility is the heart. First there was soul, then there was body, and in the communion of soul and body something emerged that neither one could produce in isolation, because it arises from the interplay between spirit and matter. So just for a moment, let's put this into actual practice in our attention by watching your breath as you breathe. Remember that breath is the swing that moves constantly between the outer and the inner, between the material and the abstract. So as you exhale, feel as though a breeze is blowing out through you from the innermost depths. And when you breathe out, you extend a presence into the world. If you say something, you make a declaration, you bring about a vibration in the air, and those around you hear, and it alters the situation. But at a subtler level, that is already true in the very outgoing of the breath. Each breath extends a presence, it exerts an atmosphere. So as you exhale, feel that what was innermost radiates. It commences beyond what one can possibly call oneself. It commences with the infinite, but from that profoundest source, it blows through your soul. And through the soul, it descends upon the mind. It descends upon first the heart, which is the depth of the mind, penetrates and transverses your heart, and then opens out into the more more prosaic component of the heart, which is the mind, and then passing through the mind into the atmosphere, it must traverse your body. It passes through your glands and radiates from every cell. So this wave, with each exhalation, is a wave that dawns in place beyond time and space, and which crashes over the shore of this time and this place, washing through you. And then, as you inhale, notice the converse, which is that by no means are you oblivious to what is around you. You're not you only unilaterally projecting consciousness, but you are also very sensitively registering all that impinges on you. So as you inhale, draw in the surrounding atmosphere, all of the presences, the tones, vibrations, colors, rhythms, patterns of walls and windows, the carpet and the ceiling, and all of the beings in this room, visible and invisible. Feel all of these presences around you and spiraling into you as you inhale. Imprinted on your senses, photons pass through your eyelids and thread your optic nerve. Ruffles in the air beat on the eardrum and are conducted to the brain. So all of the senses communicate impressions that gather in the mind, and in the mind are distilled so that what the heart inhales of this is a melange, a perfume that synthesizes these many disparate elements, and this zolk, this inner taste, is drawn into the soul as an idea of the world, a reflection back in the higher planes from below, and that abstracted idea then is drawn right back into the core of all being. From the core of being, everything has been produced, and at last all is due to return to that pure essence, and we are a channel of that return. We are conveyors of creation back to the creative origin through this action of the heart. And then we exhale, a new breath comes, the radiance transpires through soul and heart and mind and body. And this way we breathe out and in, and the ebb and flow is the crystallization of spirit and the abstraction of matter. soon we will be going our different ways and returning from the serenity and silence of this oasis back out into the bazaar of life. So before we go, let's ask ourselves, what awaits me there, out in the world, in my life? What is the particular dilemma you're confronting right now? What is your objective? If there is an obstruction, what is it? What are the hard choices you have to make? And what is at stake in these choices? What matters in all of this? It's all too easy to become caught up in overheated passions and to be embroiled in little confrontations and to fail to see the larger panorama. Particularly if one is on a journey, one cannot afford to be caught up in entanglements that lead nowhere, unnecessary spats and unfruitful banter is all, it's also purposeless. All the while, the real purpose of our life goes unanswered, so a certain economy is necessary, economy of words, a streamlining, the resolve not to go off course, keep on the straight path. Not to involve oneself in what is not one's business, not one's work. Do your work. What is your service to render? Know it. Fulfill it. That's of the essence. Know your path. Know the direction in which you seek to travel and walk it clearly, while still we have these feet, while still we are here on earth, which will not be for so long anyway. So you look at the situation that you'll be confronting on return, and just see clearly what is going on. what is involved in that situation, all the details. Make sure if you're going to take action, make decisions, that you have all the relevant information. You should act upon the fullest possible knowledge and not just on some shred of evidence. You need to see as much as you can, and not only see the data, but also what underlies the data, the history, the underlying backstory, and the deeper motivations of those who are involved. So you don't just react superficially, but you see what is unfolding in its fullest context, diachronically. Within the whole frame of history, and especially within the context of hiero history, that is to say, the legacy of the divine revelation and its implications for human life. Then further, consider the different individuals who are a party to the situation, and seek, if you can, to accommodate them all in your heart. Can you extend compassion to every single person, whether that person is powerful in the situation or devoid of power, whether that person is your friend in the situation or your enemy, irrespective of those differences. These are all embodied souls, creatures of God, sisters and brothers to ourselves. So above and beyond the dynamics that have made you friends or enemies, can you simply acknowledge a fellow traveler through existence in each of these individuals, and a recipient of divine mercy? Now, of course, that doesn't mean that you are obligated to accede to the demands of each and every person in your surroundings. When someone acts unjustly and attempts to coerce you, or to enlist you in the injustice, or to do harm to those in your care or to you yourself, of course you have every right to stand for what is fair and just. But the great mark of excellence in life is to unite justice and mercy. And so even in standing up to what is wrong, to do so magnanimously, kindly, graciously, and in a spirit of forgiving. Even when you're battling oppression in your heart, you forgive it even as you fight it. And then keep keep asking yourself, what is the ideal here? What is possible? See, everyone is pursuing his or her interest in a situation. And you have to confess that you have your own interest in mind. So see that your actions have been driven by that angle of vision, which is all your own. But then see that the ideal necessarily will not consist in, you know, one of several individuals having his or her way and triumphing over others. The ideal is discovering the sum that's the whole that's greater than the sum of the parts. It's like you know, a body, if dismembered, if there would be arms and legs and head and all of the different organs and limbs laid out there. Well, the ideal is the working assemblage of them all, how they all intersect in just the right way that serves the whole of life, and a solution that is just for the sake of the arm or the head or the foot is no ultimate solution. Mm-hmm. So organicity is crucial, how everything is part of a great whole. And that's true at the ultimate scale, but also at every level of organization. There are holes within the whole, levels of wholeness. Each cell is a miniature whole, but then that cell is part of an organ that is a whole, but it's part of a system, which is part of a body, which is part of a species, which is part of a planet. It's part of a solar system, a galaxy, a universe. So in every situation, where is the potential wholeness, and how do I serve its clarification and realization? Let that be the guiding principle. It's not a matter of one part triumphing over another. That leads to nothing but an imbalance that will result again in conflict. Where is the whole here, and how can I serve the sustaining of the whole? So we'll be going our different ways, and we've been keeping silence, I hope as much as possible, hopefully all together throughout these last days. But now we are ready to resume that very essential human function, which is speech. Some philosophers have even defined the human being as nafsa natiqa, the speaking soul. So speech is the presence of the logos working in us. Moshe says that when a child first speaks, then the soul really incarnates, fully incarnates. So speech must be acknowledged as a divine power in us. And that's precisely why we've suspended it, because we wanted to purify the tongue, not to take it for granted and keep misusing it, but to suspend speech, to prepare ourselves to speak well, to speak truly, to speak generously. So when we now emerge, we'll take up the use of our tongues again, and let's pledge to say what is true according to our knowledge, not to say anything that deviates from what we know to be the case. And moreover, let not truth-telling be an excuse for reproachfulness. May our words be ennobling, inspiring, uplifting. Words that construct and build rather than tear down and destroy. So feel a light on your tongue and 11 times we invoke the name of the divine speaker and ask that the divine speech be with us in all that we say. Ya Kalim, 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 Ya Kalim. In just a few moments, we will pause and the room will be arranged for the performance of the service of universal worship, honoring revelation in its many dispensations. And then we will witness the accolade of Night of Purity being given to those who have, for the last 4.5 years, every day, practiced the iron and then copper and then silver and then golden rules, and who promise now to live these rules for the rest of their lives. Any of you who wishes to seriously undertake this pledge, you may see Sir Howardy and commence to do this work, to recite and practice these rules every day. These are guiding principles to live a life of conscientiousness and integrity. But before we have our pause now, we will pass to you the patches, which are the tabarukat, the mementos of blessing of our gathering here, and which are yours to take with you and to sew on to a shawl or a scarf, which perhaps you wear when you pray and meditate. So, where are the patches? Joaquin is away. No, he just went to get them, I hope. Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, we'll pass around the patches just before the ceremony of the accolade. So now is a good time to pause, and we'll have our break, and then begin again. He's got them. All right. Okay. So now, could you play the Gloria of Bach? And each one, just come up and I'll give you a patch, one at a time. Yeah.